This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to our weekly Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. And a reminder that Layla Mudin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist, is available for consultations. And even if you can't come to New York and you want to keep your position, you can have a phone consultation with Layla, or you can come to the office. We'd be happy to accommodate you at Hoffman Center in Midtown Manhattan. And she will work with you to optimize your supplement program and your diet. Just check drhoffman.com for information on how you can become a patient. And, of course, I see patients as well. But that's a more involved process where you actually become a medical patient of the Hoffman Center. And then you still get to work with Layla because that's part of every visit. Okay. What questions do we still have for today?
Okay. We've got an email from Aaron. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, what do you think of checking vitamin D status at home via a mail order kit?
Okay. Well, here's the problem. I've been doing vitamin D testing since the early 90s. And this is, or perhaps even the late 80s. I've been early 90s or late 80s. And it's actually really hard to do vitamin D testing accurately. So I think some of our listeners remember that in 2009, Quest Diagnostics, which is one of the largest medical labs in the U.S., had to send letters to thousands of doctors warning them that there were problems with an in-house test that may have resulted in inaccurate results being reported to patients. I was actually interviewed by the New York Times on that subject as an expert on nutrition.
I remember.
This is actually the largest patient recall of a laboratory test in recent memory. So this is a lab that is a large commercial lab with very, very, very deep resources doing tests on blood. And so what some outfits have done, I think Life Extension and the Vitamin D Council and possibly Natural News, they are selling kits which are based on a finger stick, like a diabetes test. I think that's the way it's done. And they give you a little lancet and you put some drop of blood on the piece of filter paper or the indicator paper. And then you send it in and you'll get an analysis. I think that's the way it's done. I mean, unless it requires a blood draw. But I think it's the idea is to sort of short circuit the doctor's office.
Yeah.
And it's a self-test. And you know, I have to say that may give you a ballpark, but I really kind of question the accuracy of those tests. Because even the standard tests that are done in doctor's offices, there's a lot of controversy. I sometimes split samples. I'll do one test in my office lab, and I'll send it out, and I may get a 25 in my home test, and I'll get a 43 in the from the commercial lab. So that's kind of concerning, is that there's a lot of disparities in the testing.
And there are still disparities in the testing, even though this happened a long time ago.
Yes.
With Quest. So it is.
It's not that easy to do. You know, a lot of people have just absolute faith in tests. They think that they're deadly accurate. But doing a blood test is a little bit like baking a cake according to a very fancy recipe. You know, you take the blood and then you have to prepare it in a certain way and you have to dilute it in a certain way. And then you have to calibrate your machine, make sure that your machine has got the right reagents in it that are properly installed, and then you have to also do a lot of quality control, which is expensive, using samples of a known concentration against your testing methodology to make sure that your machine is working accurately. And when you're churning out tests on a mass basis, you know, thousands and thousands of tests, sometimes they cut corners. So that's actually one of the reasons I actually like to do tests in office, because, you know, it's kind of like the difference between factory-made shoes and individual handmade shoes, you know.
Yeah, yes.
They're more expensive, but more care is taken.
But who wouldn't want a pair? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wow. Well, and I want to remind Aaron that it's important to have your vitamin D level checked probably twice a year optimally,
mm-hmm.
once at the end of summer, once at the end of winter, because both of those numbers would be quite different, especially if you live here up in the Northeast and not down south, because we're really not getting much UVB rays between the months of October and April. And and you know, there aren't many dietary sources of vitamin D.
Right.
You'd have to eat a whole lot of salmon. You'd have to eat a whole lot of shiitake mushrooms that have been ripened in the sun. And you'd have to drink 40 glasses of milk. And who wants to do that? So.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. You'd have to drink 40. I think you have to drink 40 glasses of milk to get what, 4,000?
Because in a quart of milk, in a quart of milk is only 400 IU.
So to get 4,000, which is easily achievable with a pill, or two 2,000s, you'd have to drink 40 glasses of milk, right?
Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to do that, because I'd be like,
no,
I'd be totally congested. I'd be gurgling. I wouldn't be talking.
Yeah.
I'd be gurgling, you know, through my mucus.
And that's a heck of a lot of sugar. Yeah.
That too. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've actually got another question from Aaron, who says, I was just diagnosed with Hashimoto's thyroiditis. My doctor impersonally informed me via health portal when it was not easy to connect with. On the portal, he recommended a Hashimoto's diet.
Isn't that funny? Because it's like they talk about this stuff, this electronic medical stuff is such a great advance. But what a hassle it is. What a hassle it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's like before you just got to pick up the phone, talk to your doctor, and you know, if you could get through to your doctor. Now your doctor like goes through some complicated, secure website, and it all is recorded for posterity because it has to be every communication. But some of these systems are... Some of them are great. Some of them are very unwieldy. This is kind of the future face of medicine is that, hello, this is your doctor talking. It's like a pop-up on your computer screen. Okay.
Mm. But, anyway. You know, so many people would love that kind of thing. But anyway, all right, here's my beef with this. Erin says that on the portal, her doctor recommended a Hashimoto's diet. And Erin's question to us is, what does this consist of? Why was Erin not referred to a qualified nutritionist to help her with the autoimmune condition of Hashimoto's thyroiditis?
Wow.
This is what I have a beef with.
That's kind of crazy, isn't it? Because it's kind of like you're on your own, guy. I mean, the suggestion
is... Yeah, go find a Hashimoto's diet.
Right.
I mean, what in the world? And, of course, you know, people who believe everything they read on the web, they're going to get all kinds of misinformation and so forth. And anyway, so this drives me crazy.
Okay.
Erin, first of all, with Hashimoto's being an autoimmune condition, likely suspect, and you should definitely be tested for gluten sensitivity, dairy, you know, food allergies, all of that. The usual suspects in autoimmunity are typically gluten and casein, casein meaning dairy. Also, possibly the nightshade family of vegetables, tomatoes, white potatoes, eggplant, peppers of all kinds. And people are unaware that tobacco is actually a nightshade as well.
But does it really matter if you smoke it, that smoking it, because if you chewed it, maybe.
Sure. I mean, you're still ingesting it, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not, you know, I know that technically, I'm not sure, though, that it would give you arthritis symptoms comparable to eating tomato sauce. But, you know, I'm not sure. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So that would be step one of your Hashimoto's diet. And, of course, removing any foods that may be inflammatory in you, and that could be anything depending on your unique allergy profile, and that's something to be explored.
How about the goitrogens?
And, you know,
how about that whole thing about the goitrogens?
The goitrogens, avoiding the goitrogens are actually a good idea. And actually, the two biggest ones are soy and also millet.
Millet, really? But not cabbage family vegetables?
That was actually news to me.
Mm-hmm. Not cabbage family
and
vegetables?
And also the brassica, yes.
Sure.
The brassica family of vegetables, which include a lot of the crucifers like broccoli,
right.
cauliflower, cabbage, kohlrabi, kale, Brussels sprouts.
So apropos of that, I just, I'm sitting here with my iPad in hand, and I just pulled something up from my archives here. It's an article in the New England Journal of Medicine from 2010, May 20th, 2010, entitled Myxedema Coma Induced by Ingestion of Raw Bok Choy. Now, myxedema is a form of edema, very severe edema and swelling that's caused by complete cessation of thyroid function. You know, people who have a little bit of hypothyroid, they tend to be a little puffy, have water retention, their features are sort of dull. And then if you take thyroid, sometimes you actually see the cheekbones emerge and the features emerge. So myxedema is a very, very profound form of hypothyroidism. And a coma, of course, is, it's more than just a little fatigue, right? Okay, so here's the story.
Yeah.
An 88-year-old Chinese woman was brought to the emergency department by her family, who reported that she had been lethargic and unable to walk or swallow for 3 days. You know, when that happens in an 88-year-old, you think, maybe she's checking out. You know, this could be like final nosedive, right? Slippery slope.
Yeah.
She had been eating an estimated 1.0 to 1.5 kilograms of raw bok choy. Let's do the math. 1 kilo is 2.2 pounds, and 1.5 is about, more than 3 pounds.
Yeah.
2 to 3 pounds of raw bok choy daily for several months in the belief that it would help control her diabetes. She had no previous history of thyroid disease, and so they did the physical exam. The temperature was low, the pulse was slow, the blood pressure turned out to be high in this case. Respiratory rate was fast. She had edema in her lower legs. She had what's called periorbital edema, which is like a real swelling under the eyes, and a big tongue. Her skin was dry. Her hair was coarse. She didn't have any reflexes. So all of the hallmarks of thyroid problems. And then they tested her thyroid, and they found that her thyroid was completely blown away. Her TSH, which normally should be less than 3.5, was 74. And so they gave her thyroid, and she was okay. She said it fixed her.
I hope they told her to stop eating bok choy.
Yeah, definitely. But here's the discussion. They say studies in the 1920s were the first to note the development of hypertrophic goiters, like a swelling around the thyroid, in rabbits that were mainly fed a diet of cabbage. So they discovered this substance called 1,5-vinyl-2-thioxazolidine in brassica seeds and in yellow turnips. The compound was termed a goitrin, because it inhibited the uptake of iodine by the thyroid gland. So it's actually, iodine is also a factor that's involved in this. If you don't have enough iodine, you can get a problem. So this this means even in the presence of iodine, it blocks the iodine. In our patient, the problem was her consumption of considerable amounts of raw bok choy. When eaten raw, brassica vegetables release the enzyme myrosinase, which accelerates the breakdown of glucosinolates. The cooking process largely deactivates the myrinase in these vegetables. Okay?
And for all the raw foods aficionados out there,
The juicers.
Here is a reason to cook some of your vegetables.
Yeah. This is, I actually included the reference to this in my juicing article last week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And juicing, yes. Those of you who are juicing big bags of kale every day, not a great thing, and especially if you already have hypothyroidism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
So, Dr. Hoffman, what do you think of iodine therapy for Hashimoto's?
I think it can be done, but it has to be done cautiously, because when your thyroid is inflamed, it can actually suppress your thyroid, or it can send your thyroid into overdrive.
Sword, right?
Yeah. It's very tricky. It's very tricky, and there are doctors like Dr. David Brownstein who have written a lot about this and claim to know how to do this safely, But there are many mm-hmm. case reports of people who are given high-dose thyroid who either have a further suppression of their thyroid function or they go into thyroid storm, you know, with a real hyper production of thyroid. So I think, you know, moderate iodine supplementation is warranted, but I don't think that the cure is just to give a lot of iodine. You know, anecdotally, I'll tell you, I just got an email from, I think it was a patient or a listener, I don't know, that just by taking a little bit of kelp daily, kelp supplement, which is probably about 150 or 300 micrograms of iodine, that they felt much better with that. You know, because maybe they weren't getting enough iodine. Not enough iodine can produce a goiter. It can produce hypothyroidism.
Yeah. Wow. So, Aaron, go see a nutritionist for a Hashimoto's diet, a proper one individual. Yeah.
And I will tell you, the single most important nutrient for Hashimoto's is selenium. I would give a lot of selenium. I think selenium is really helpful for that. So
good thyroid support.
Yep. Very important for the thyroid in Hashimoto's. Really works. Maybe, you know, 200 to 400 micrograms a day would be good.
Let's see. We've got another question here. This is actually Aaron's last question. My most recent ferritin level is 27. I wonder whether this is why my hair has been shedding for the last 8 years. I am
is
now
this
on
Aaron, a male, AARON, or is a female E-R-I-N?
No, female.
Okay,
female.
So, yeah. So some makes more sense. That makes more sense. So, yes, there could be, well, as you know, Layla, you work with a lot of people with hair problems, that 27 is an acceptable ferritin. It's not considered terribly deficient, but to have optimal hair growth, the milestone, I think, is 70. You know, that's what you want to hit if you want to have optimal
hair
growth.
I think you also need a ferritin of about 70 to support thyroid. So this is very interesting.
Right. And by the way, I will say this, is that because people with thyroid problems have a slowed down metabolism, it's almost always the case that they do better on a high protein, high fat, low carb diet than more like a paleo diet than a vegan diet is just a disaster because the from a standpoint of traditional Chinese medicine, hypothyroidism is a cold condition. And so these diets that are all raw foods are, from an energetic standpoint, cold diets. So you don't treat a cold condition with a cold diet in Chinese medicine. You want to actually warm the body with foods that are cooked, prepared, and more assimilable and have more concentrated nutrients.
Well, Aaron is taking Optiferrin twice daily and experiencing constipation as a result.
Well, that's what happens with iron supplements, for sure.
Aaron, you could take some magnesium citrate to help counteract that.
Or you can eat a lot more meat.
The citrate form of magnesium is a nice stool softener. So that could be helpful.
We always prefer natural sources of iron, you know, the best of which are animal
protein. Increase your ferritin, yes, definitely. There's iron in the egg yolks. There's iron in dark meat poultry, not so much in white meat. So opt for the chicken leg rather than the breast. Certainly there's iron in red meat and in organ meats as well.
Right.
We don't get a lot of iron from plant sources like spinach and peas and lentils because those plant foods also contain phytates, which can bind minerals such as iron.
Bind minerals and make them less bioavailable. Especially with zinc. That's another one that really is interfered with a high-grain diet. Many of the studies that look at the negative effects of phytates come from Iran, where people consume a lot of whole grains. But, you know, like tabbouleh, you know, cracked wheat, but they don't have other zinc sources. And the phytates in the grains and in the vegetables bind a lot of the zinc and cause deficiency.
Aaron, thank you for your questions.
Indeed.
Okay.
We have time for one short question. Is there such a thing? Not the question, please, on how do you prevent or how do you reverse cardiovascular disease. Don't give us that one.
Oh, okay. That would be the next question.
No.
Yeah, we're going to have to save it for next week. How to reverse plaque in the arteries.
An entire podcast.
If we can.
That's an entire podcast.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
By the way, just speaking of which, I just did a podcast with Dr. Tony Lamas on the subject of chelation therapy, which is really our flagship treatment for reversing plaque in the arteries. And that's available at drhoffman.com.
Look forward to listening to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. All right.
Is there such a thing as a short question?
Yeah, no. A short question. We've got a nice little comment here from Richard, who, let me read this to you. Richard writes, in order to reduce the intake of gluten, I decided to stop eating cereal for breakfast, but I wanted something with fiber and protein. What I decided on is a hard-boiled egg and about a dozen and a half of whole natural almonds with a cup of green tea. It's caffeinated, but without milk or sugar. It seems to keep me satisfied for about 4 hours before I need lunch or something small to get me to lunch. This is a beautiful breakfast.
Right. That sounds like a breakfast that's Whole30 compliant.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's actually, there's some very slow release carbs in the nuts. There's a lot of fat.
Mm-hmm.
There's protein. The
and
eggs
fiber.
Are pure protein and fiber. So
mm-hmm.
that,
yes.
And that's what people will find when they have that kind of breakfast, is they won't be like starving, craving, you know, going nuts at 11 o'clock and, you know, looking for the bagel cart.
Exactly. Exactly. Where's that 10 a.m. coffee with my muffin?
Yeah. Right.
Carry on, Richard. That sounds good.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that is a good question to cap off today's edition of our weekly Q&A with Layla. We invite you to send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. And keep in mind that these podcasts are free. We're happy to provide them as a free resource. But help us underwrite the production costs of these podcasts by becoming a regular shopper at drhoffman.com. There you can get your supplement needs met and assure the continuity of this valuable information source, drhoffman.com. Click on the store, and you'll find a complete assortment of many of the supplements that we reference here on our podcasts. Thanks for joining us this week, Layla.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.